He says justice is nothing but the advantage of the stronger. Or to put it slightly differently, justice is the same thing in every state. The advantage of the established ruling class. This sounds wildly improbable as a definition for justice and very antiquated as a definition for justice until we realize that this is in fact what many Marxian and, as they say, postmodernist thinkers would argue. That justice is in fact a tool which those in power use to convince the people whom they are dominating, be those people women or people of other races or people who have been colonized or exploited workers or whomever, to convince those people that what they should do is submit to a situation in which the people who are in charge stay in charge. There are whole schools of discourse in the current academic world which are devoted precisely, though not acknowledgedly, to furthering the definition of Thrasymachus with a view towards undoing it and empowering the oppressed. That definition doesn't satisfy Socrates, though. And he goes on in discussing justice to say that what he would like to do is establish an imaginary city on the theory that a city and a soul are analogous constructions in some sense, that what's good in a city is likewise good in a soul. It's another version of the idea that we see in the Odyssey, that Odysseus gets his psyche in order and then gets his household in order. Socrates argues, according to Plato, that a city is bigger than a household and bigger than a psyche. Let's look at it there. He fundamentally argues that there should be three classes in an ideal society. The lowest class, which is devoted to satisfying its appetites, which is farmers and artisans and so forth. A higher class, whom he calls guardians, with warriors in mind, thinking that their role is to defend the state. And the highest class of all, philosophers or philosopher kings, who have access to rationality and to reason and know what's best for the whole structure and therefore should give orders to the whole structure. He also goes so far as to claim in a very controversial passage that, knowing as they do what's best for everybody, if necessary to convince the guardians and the lowest group to do what they should do, the philosopher king should tell them noble lies, that is, lies which are factually false but lead to good results. The analogy then, and this is an analogy that has a very long history, we have departed from it to some extent recently, but it runs well into the 19th century and is still with us to some extent, and that is this. If we equate philosopher kings with reason, they should rule over the interior psychic equivalent of the guardians, which is our capacity for self-defense, our capacity to resist things which we don't like, which threaten to impede us. That can get out of hand, though. And if that finds expression in the absence of reason, the result is violence and anger in totally inappropriate situations. No good, but relatively rare. Much more common for you, for me, for almost all of us, is the situation in which the psychic dimension that Plato equates with the artisans and the farmers and so forth gets out of control. And that's desire, eros. That's the wish for food, for sex, for pleasure, for whatever it may be. And on Plato's view of things, that, too, should be submitted finally to the rule of reason. So what is justice, then, on this view? Everybody doing what they should is what Plato says,